Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome back to Behind the Veil, a show that provides insight into the world of weddings. I am your host, Keith Willard. Welcome back. Today, I am so excited because it's one of the things that we've actually never talked about on this show before, which is wedding etiquette. And God knows there are a million questions about what stepmothers should be doing and if somebody's new boyfriend should be involved, all those lovely things. And so our guest today is the great-great-granddaughter of the original Emily Post. Oh, yes. That's right. We have Lizzie Post. But before I bring her on, let me introduce our Behind the Veil co-host, Marcy Gutenberg, with An Affair to Remember by Marcy. Hi, Marcy.
Hello. How is everybody today? How are you?
Yay. I mean, I love the fact that we were having this great conversation with Lizzie right before we went on, and I cannot wait. This
I'm so excited. You know me. I mean, I love etiquette, so this is like right up my alley.
I know. This is like for you, this is like fodder, man. Like you're etiquette person.
Living in a candy store for me.
Well, and I love the fact that, you know, they're just coming out with the Emily Post Etiquette 20th edition, which is going to be available this fall, but pre-sales are going to be available tomorrow. And then she's also written a book called Higher Etiquette, A Guide to the World of Cannabis. Yes, girls and boys, pot etiquette. What? I always thought it was like, hand it to the right. I don't know. I just. All right. Well, let's bring her on. Lizzie Post, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. And there's certainly a lot to talk about when it comes to weed and weddings, like in legalized states.
Right?
This is a thing.
It's a whole thing. And actually, you know what? Just to get us started, you know, there was that recent article really that they actually put the bride in jail. Or yep. Maybe the groom in jail because they put pot in everybody's food.
Yeah,
that was in Florida.
It was,
of course, it was Florida.
Talk about, you know, right? Florida bride. it was so bad. That is like exactly the opposite of what anyone should be doing. First of all, when you consume cannabis by eating it, it actually changes the molecular structure of it. It becomes this teeny tiny little molecule, and that molecule in your bloodstream goes up to your brain, and it can go through your blood-brain barrier so much more easily than if you smoke it. And so it's why most people, when they take an edible, they say start low and slow, is that you really want to make sure you're being safe because it hits you so differently from inhaling. There's a lot to consider, but never in the world of etiquette would we say that it is okay to dose somebody. Like, I mean, they did this without telling anyone and were like giggling about it, apparently. And that was just horrific to me. It was like, no, this is not what you do. This is a really bad representation about how cannabis can be applied at weddings in ways that work, you know?
Well, and you know, the thing is that what really bothered me, of course, obviously that it's Florida, obviously it was Florida, but then also it might've given other people some ideas, and I was like, please don't give people ideas. Oh my God, please don't give people ideas.
This is a bad idea.
It's a bad idea. And I actually did a wedding for a pot farm company, a couple. Absolutely. They actually owned a pot farm, and part of the gift was an edible. Yes. Yeah. But it was labeled like it was had like, you know, the warning signs and all over that this is not candy. This is an edible for goodness sakes, use at your own risk kind of thing. And I was like, okay, well, the whole place smelled like weed. And of course, we were at a Ritz-Carlton. So that was even better. That was so much fun trying to explain that to the general manager. Yeah. So, oh my God. So, okay. Wedding etiquette. It's one of those things that I think that as we've grown and as millennials have come into the world and as, you know, I think barriers have kind of been broken down because, you know, before it used to be the parents planned it, the parents paid for it, and the kids showed up, period. Yep. You don't get any say, right? You're going to stand at the altar and get married.
Wedding dress. Like I remember the day she found it in my grandfather's attic and was just like, eh. Like it was nothing special to her because it was her mother's vision, not hers at all, you know?
Exactly. And so things have changed dramatically. So are there still rules about who pays for a wedding, like, and who pays for the rehearsal, or are those kind of out the door now?
They're really out the door at this point. Our advice is that we tell couples and wedding planners to really suggest that the couple have a candid conversation with anyone important to them, because we're also not all getting married at 24 years old with a mother and a father. We might have a chosen family who's decided to sponsor our wedding and celebrate. We might have aunts, uncles, godparents, grandparents, siblings who might be the people who decide to pay for a wedding or help us with a wedding, or we might be doing it ourselves. Right. And so it is really important to have a candid conversation. And I think that often asking some of those traditional players, because a lot of folks do have parents who are very interested in paying for a wedding. And oftentimes both members of a couple would like or have family that are willing to contribute. But saying to them, hey, we'd love to sit down and hear your thoughts on if you're interested in contributing to the wedding. I think it also gives people a chance to say, I'm interested in contributing, but only in these ways, or this is how I would feel comfortable structuring it. You know, my uncle gave my cousin X amount of dollars and he said, I'm going to give it to you in 3 installments. And then you decide what to do. Other people, sometimes there are strings attached and you're going to want to know before you say yes to accepting that money.
And so that's not a bad thing to ask that question right up front. Like what strings come with this?
Yeah. You could say, go ahead, Mercy. Yeah.
No, that's exactly how I did it with my parents, because I was not a 20-year-old bride.
Right.
My husband and I, we wanted to create and design it ourselves. And we sat down with, you know, with the parents and said, listen, we want to design it. We want to create it. We want to have the control over it, pretty much is really where we went. And we said, you're welcome to contribute if you'd like. There is no pressure. You do not have to. It's completely up to you.
Right.
And
I think that's perfect. And also a lot of things have changed because we have a lot of mixed religions now. I know a lot of ceremonies have changed dramatically because we're having little pieces of different ceremonies. I mean, I recently had a ceremony that had like 8 different religions represented, like literally everything from jumping the broom to stepping on the glass to the unity candle. Like it was ding, 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 ding. It was awesome. It ended up being awesome, thank goodness, because the officiant was awesome about it. But that changes everything that we kind of assumed we knew about wedding etiquette.
Right?
So what are the basics? What are the basics? Like,
oh my gosh. Well, the basics.
I know. That's kind of wide range. There's a whole book. There's a whole book called Wedding Etiquette. Emily Post, Wedding Etiquette, sixth edition.
I will say what I really love about that book. I was recently you're always looking at your work and thinking, how am I going to update this? But I was recently reading the opener to that book and it really almost made me cry, because it really helped brides and those who might be planning a wedding focus on what is truly important and the idea of putting people first and the idea of thinking about what is going to really truly make you feel married. Because I think today we all know how the wedding industry is blown way out of proportion. And in some ways that can be so much fun. I mean, so much fun. But in other ways, it can feel like a burden. It can feel like something that makes your wedding far beyond your marriage. You can see people fall apart, and sometimes even relationships fall apart through planning a wedding. And that's not the goal. The goal is unity. The goal is bringing people together and connecting family and friends. And so I think one of the biggest overarching things to think about when it comes to any kind of wedding, whether it's a small, sweet backyard DIY wedding, or whether it's a huge grand event planned at one of the fanciest venues that you have, is to really think about what is going to make you feel married and to keep that as your main focus. If flowers aren't a big deal to you, then flowers don't have to be a big deal at your wedding. If food is really important to you because you and your partner are foodies, that might be your sole focus. You know, it really depends on what works for you. And beyond that, you know, usually you're balancing the big three, which are your budget, your guest list, and these three work in a little Venn diagram where they all overlap and you can't get away from the other.
Can you take the last one again? The budget,
The it's your budget, your guest list, and your venue. Because your venue might tell you how big your guest list can be. Your budget might tell you what kind of venue you can have. Your guest list might dictate the other two. I mean, it really just depends. What you know, is it more important to get married in the place? Or is it more important to get married on a certain budget? Is it more important to have the entire I mean, I think at one point when I was almost engaged, I was looking at what it was going to take just to get just my family that I cared about. And that list was like already up to 80 something people. And I was like, that's bigger than I even thought I wanted. I mean,
it is the Emily Post family, so I'm sure it's massive. Oh my God. So like when it comes to weddings, you know, the big one that everybody always talks about is the objection, right? The wedding objection. Right.
Dramatic
moment. Dun, dun, dun. Exactly. Yeah, and it was one of those things that I was actually asked about recently for by a reporter. And I said, well, it's really not done anymore. I mean, if there's an objection, usually you will know about the objections leading up to the wedding. And those people typically aren't invited to the wedding. Is there etiquette when it comes to like if somebody really does object to a wedding? Is that proper to go? No,
really did object to a wedding. I would hope that they would be willing to discuss that privately with whatever member of the couple they're attached to. But it happens in so many ways, right? It could be a parent objecting from their own perspective. Like, I don't think this person is the right person for you. Yeah. It could be a former lover saying, no, 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 I'm doing everything to try and get my last shot with you.
Yeah, that's the way to do it.
Which I kind of say, you know, divorce is real too. You can have that conversation afterwards. I do think that it's important to recognize that the objection is far more of an entertainment industry fabled dramatic moment. It does happen in real life because sometimes people choose to emulate that moment or they choose to use it. They feel really desperate.
Social media, you know,
it's social media might encourage you to do it. And so it's important to I think recognize that it's a possibility, but from an etiquette standpoint, I would say it is definitely bad behavior.
You heard it there. Do not object, people. Go ahead. You first.
No, I was just going to say that, and of course, COVID brain, I'm like starting to lose my train of thought.
By the way, thank you so much. Thank you so much, because I know that you had COVID last week and you're still recovering.
And we said,
this is a perfect recovery show. Come on, it is. You'll be fine. You'll be fine.
Cheering me up massively. I think I tested today that like the little strip is like barely showing. I'm like, I'm almost to a positive.
That's so funny. Oh my God. So thank you so much. So we totally understand. And I feel like I still have COVID brain, even though I had COVID like 4 months ago, but whatever. That's just me being, you
know. It's a thing.
It's a thing. It really is a thing. So one of the questions I actually wanted to ask you is about wedding room makeup etiquette, right? Ooh, okay. Because that always gets a little tense in there because you have a mother, you might have a stepmother, you have a mother-in-law, like you have a lot of parents that are all of a sudden in your room. Who has the authority?
In your ear.
Yeah. Who has the authority over their child? Is it the mom or is everybody need to take a step back that day and let the bride be the bride? Is the bride in charge?
The latter, I think, is the key, is that the bride needs to be the bride. The bride needs to feel confident. And it might be that the bride is enlisting someone like a mother or a best friend. And hey, you know, grooms and non-binary folks can do makeup too at their weddings. So
yeah, really absolutely.
Anyone who's having these treatments done, I think that it's really important to recognize that the couple getting married get the priority no matter what. So if I am a bridesmaid, I'm not going to be complaining about what hairstyle was chosen for me if it was chosen for me.
Is that proper to choose your hairstyle for your bridesmaids?
I think it's really nice when the couple allows the people having the hair done to actually make a choice. But I've been at a number of weddings where the bride, for instance, was going to wear her hair down. And so all the bridesmaids' hair is going to be up. That way she can shine, you know?
Right.
And Other times people don't care. They want you to choose, and you can, if it's free reign, it's free reign. Mohawks included.
But that's allowed to be able to tell your bridesmaid, sorry, you can't leave your hair down, or don't be a bridesmaid, I guess, right? That's your option?
No, it is the bride and the couple really do get a chance to say, this is what we're looking for. And then the wedding party has to say whether or not they're going to participate, pretty much. It's one of those things where it's why we always say, don't say yes when someone invites you to be a part of their wedding party. Say, I would like to do more and think about it. And I've had some people come back and say, that's horrible. The only answer should be yes. And I'm going, when it's going to cost someone thousands of dollars to participate, when you're about to dictate that they get a spray tan and cut their hair and do their nails a certain way, that person has a choice to say no to those things. You are
100%.
Like, the bride does not get to dictate to that particular level. But I do think it's important to recognize, though, that the bride is in control of a lot of those things. And if the bride says you're going to wear a purple dress and it's going to be of this material and this cut, that's what's being offered on the table, not something else. If you go back to Emily's day, Emily's way harsher. Like, when you look at I'm like looking around for it on my desk. 1922 edition. I mean, she talks about it like the bridesmaids really have no choice. And it is like,
really?
Like, bother getting considered. You're playing a role, play your part. So I think we've come a long way since then. But I think it's really important for brides to have a really clear vision up ahead of what they want their wedding party to look like and how they want their wedding party to participate. And then state that when you're inviting someone to join it so that they can say, oh, I really appreciate it, but it sounds like I'm going to be a better guest.
See, and that's a great response.
What about the dress? I mean, like, if you have people of different ages or different heights and so forth, or different weights or such.
Curvy
or really super, super thin.
Right.
I mean, obviously, not every dress is going to look, not every dress is going to look the same on everybody. So would you say send them a color, tell them the color, and then they pick out their own style based on their personality or with some limitations maybe?
Mm-hmm. I think that's the best way to go, Marcy. I think that giving people a color choice and maybe even a fabric type. So for instance, my sister, I was a bridesmaid in her wedding, and she had said, I just want you guys to wear pastels. You can pick any dress you want. We all kind of panicked because we knew she had a little bit more of a vision than that. And when I started sending dresses that fit the pastel, but was like my own style or my own material, she was going, no, I actually do want you in something flowy. And so it became a little more direction. And the more direction was really helpful. I think when it gets too restrictive to that point that different body types are really going to be uncomfortable on that day, that's when I find it not being very thoughtful, frankly.
Proper.
Is that, like, I really think you want to be thoughtful as a bride as to what you're asking people to pay for. Please don't tell people, oh, you can wear it again. You can almost never wear it.
Oh, my God, I hate that. Oh, when they say, it can be a cocktail reception.
It's dresses that I will never wear again.
Right.
I love that. You can make it a cocktail dress. No, you can't. No, you can't. You know, I had a wedding once where it was so crazy because the mom was helping pay for a lot of the wedding. So she felt like she had a big say in it. And the bride absolutely wanted her wedding outdoors. And Marcy probably knows who I'm talking about. Absolutely said, no, I will not. The mother-in-law said, I will not support this wedding if your ceremony is outdoors. And the mother-in-law is fairly well known in the South Florida world. And I had to actually pull the mom aside and say, look, out of everybody coming to this wedding, you're the one that is most well known. And if you decide to pull out of the ceremony because you don't want to sit outside, you're going to look like a bitch.
Yeah.
They're not going to say, oh, can you believe that the bride wanted to have her ceremony outside? Nobody's going to think that.
No one.
They're going to look at the mother and go, wow. what a B word. Holy, can you believe she did that? You know, and so begrudgingly, she then took part of the outdoor ceremony, but it was like pulling teeth.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
people can get little bees in their bonnet. And weddings, for some reason, I think the combination of often the amount of time and money spent really stresses people out. And when people are in that stressed out mode, it's kind of amazing to see where they choose to dig their heels in. And I think you did her well by saying to her, hey, listen, this isn't going to have the impact you think it's going to have. Look at the optics beyond your sweating in a seat for 20 minutes. And there are things you can do. You can bring in fans. You can give people little self fans. You know, you can try and come out as late as possible, you know, so that you're not sweltering in that heat. I'm sure the bride didn't want to have their makeup running down their face, you know. And so there's definitely a lot to consider, but really think before you decide to draw a line in the sand about anything when it comes to a wedding.
Well, and by the way, it was a beautiful day. I have to tell you, it was a beautiful day. It was like 82 degrees.
I was going to say, it wasn't hot.
Right. Oh my God, it was beautiful. It was beautiful. And she was still being a BLB B word. Let me ask you about gift etiquette, right?
Yeah.
I think that's a big scary part because a lot of people don't know what is proper when it comes to writing a check or giving a gift. Are there any ground rules that people can use as a rule of thumb, so to speak?
Yeah, I think some of the guidelines around weddings and gifts they're really interesting. A wedding is the only event where if you are invited to it, you're obligated technically from an etiquette standpoint. There's no like etiquette police that's going to come and find you if you don't do this. But you're obligated to send a gift whether or not you attend the event. So if you get invited to a birthday, you don't have to send a gift if you don't go to the party. Even if you get invited to a shower, you do not have to send a gift if you don't attend that shower. But for a wedding, there is sort of this expectation that you should, because the event is so monumentous in someone's life that it's really a key moment. And you want to honor that, even if it's with a small token gift. This is actually one of the things that we created a whole new section in the 20th edition, which is actually our 100th anniversary edition. So you'll see it called Emily Post Etiquette, the Centennial Edition. I am Love so it. Proud of this book. I cannot wait for people to see it tomorrow. But what's crazy about this is that we created a section that actually asks some challenging questions, because Emily Post is not a dictator of American etiquette, but we are kind of like a social barometer. We look at what's going on and we say, this is what's happening. And I think it's really important to recognize that a lot of people don't realize this quote unquote rule exists. And with almost every wedding is a destination wedding these days. And so much that goes into it. Do you really want to be obligating gifts? Do you really want to create this weird space? And believe me, some brides and grooms find out that gifts are really supposed to happen for weddings, and then they start tracking down the guests that didn't give them something and harassing them. We had one person write into the podcast and say, I just had a bride and groom email me a page from your website saying that they were owed a gift from us and how rude we were for not having given one yet. Not how you yield Emily Post power.
You've now become a weapon.
Terrible. I mean, like, terrible and judgmental and awful. So we asked the question of, do you think gifts should be obligated even if you don't attend a wedding? We also get invited to far more weddings nowadays than we used to. And so that's another part where you might be saying no to a number of weddings. And I'll be really curious to see what the response is.
Like, people will, I mean, I get asked all the time, can I put that on my invitation? I mean, of course I say no, but how do you communicate? I mean, like, how else could you communicate to people that it's not acceptable to ask for a gift? Because that's what they're doing by putting it on the invitation.
Yeah, I'm really glad that you brought this point up, Marcy. A lot of people think, oh, it's so convenient. I can just put my registry info at the bottom of my invitation. What this immediately does when you do something like this is it takes the invitation from being about inviting someone to probably one of the most important events of your life, to jumping ahead and saying, and I want these gifts. And it puts all this focus on the gift rather than the guest. And the guest is what's important here. I mean, the couple getting married is important too, but the really in telling someone, I really appreciate you in my life and I want you to be at one of the biggest events I will ever host. And hopefully I'm only ever going to host one. Right. That's a big deal. And to jump ahead to, and by the way, get me this stuff, is just totally callous. And so it's really important that people recognize that this is not the place for it. You can do an enclosure. You can do word of mouth, I think is the best one to go for. But putting, you know, your almost every wedding website now has a registry section and everybody utilizes this. So you don't even have to mention it. You just need to mention the wedding website and there they will find all they need to gift you all the beautiful things from your registry or to be inspired by that registry and go off registry.
So not proper to put it on your invitation. I love that.
Correct. Correct.
Use your wedding website. And use the URL. And I always recommend adding a website URL in addition to the QR code. Because some of the older, you know, generation, they may not understand what a QR code is. QR code.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually, you're blowing my mind because I didn't, and it makes so much sense now. I didn't realize that people were doing a QR code. That's like, I need a reminder. I need to hang out with you more, Marcy. And we need to talk about what trends you're seeing from a stationer's point of view.
QR codes are all the new rage because then you can just send that. I mean, it's really interesting. Like I just had a wedding and we included a QR code. Remember, Marcy?
Yes.
And it
I've
took
been
them
doing
to,
a lot lately.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. It took them to a website and then they could dictate like their food choices and everything. It was all built into the
everything. Amazing to see how digital products have allowed us to streamline, I think things like an RSVP, a food choice, even things like accommodations and stuff like that. You used to have to send like a pack that was a follow-up. It was like this thick and like, and now you just don't have to. Hey, better for the environment.
No. And the nice thing about it is that, you know, with like an invitation itself is that you can then focus on the invitation itself and not have to worry so much about all those little extra cards. But I do want to ask about the
B-list. Here we go.
This is like one of my
I missed it. What was the question?
The
we missed
B-list.
It. Oh, the B-list. Yes. The A-list and the B-list. Such a good question.
How do you, I mean, like, I get thrown off by people that say that they have a B-list.
I actually encourage people.
Do you really?
I do. Well, because, you know, because venues are only so big. And so, you know, and so that if they have to limit their guest count to 100 people and they really do want to invite everybody, they really, really do. But they know that they have to invite their aunt, their uncle, their first cousin, yada, yada first. Yeah. Right. And if they say no, then it allows them to invite additional like close friends and family. So, I get it. But I want to hear your input on this.
So I think you have to be very delicate with the idea of a B-list. There are some really practical reasons for doing it. Just like we're saying, you might have a limited venue and you want to get as many people as possible in. And wouldn't it be so nice? I think that timing is the key to doing it well. Mm-hmm. That you need to be able to send that invitation out and get enough responses back to then engage some of your B-list.
Yes.
And it might be that you choose only like 10 people. I mean, what's the current like rate of return on yeses? Is it still like about 50%, but like 75% of your audience
It was typically 80%, but then during COVID it went all over the place. And so, and then once people were able to travel, it actually jumped to 95%. All of a sudden, everybody was saying yes because they want to get the hell out of town, especially here in South Florida. People are like, Florida, done. I'm coming. You're feeding me? Done. I'm coming. And now it's balanced back out a little bit. You know, we're starting to see it come back down a little bit, back to the 80%. Yeah.
Okay. So I would say that once you get a few no's, I think you can very quickly be turning around those invitations, but I would have them ready to go. They would be things I would prepay for that I wouldn't like wait until I've got this many to do and then re-engage my stationer. I think you would have it ready ready at the hand. But I think you have to be really careful because some people will be offended by this. And we try to encourage guests not to be offended by it, that it's more of a logistical and a practical thing. I try really hard, especially when I was in my 20s and talking to brides and wedding guests in their 20s, telling them, you know, it's just a reality that couples aren't always able to invite everyone they want to their wedding. And sometimes they have to put that cousin that they barely talk to above a really close friend or someone in their social group who maybe they met, you know, after college and joined that social group, whereas everyone else in that group has been friends since high school. And so like that's exactly what happened to me at one point. Like I had a group of friends, they were getting married and I was the one friend left off the guest list. And what they did for me was they said, feel free to bring a date and come after 9 o'clock for like the party part of it. And I was like, that's awesome. Thank you. But rather than being like, wow, I'm so offended, I'm the only one not invited. It's like reality check, siblings, cousins, aunts and uncles, godparents all need to be invited ahead of me. And so I think it's really good when people can understand that a B-list might be a very effective thing for a couple to actually be able to invite as many people as possible who really could attend the wedding.
And as you said, do it in advance. I always recommend can you hear me?
Now you're cutting in. Well, but that's what I'm saying is it is really important. Timing is really important. Yes. I tell my couples all the time, you have 2 weeks. There's a two-week window.
That's a really good way to put it. I think that is very good advice, Keith. Very good.
So 2 weeks, because then you can blame it on the post office. People can make up their own excuses in their head to make them feel better. It's like, oh, it must have just taken a little longer in the post, what have you, right? But it's true. You know, you want to make sure, you want to make it so that people can make their own excuses in their head before they have to say something to you, right?
Yeah,
exactly. And because people tend to err on the side of positivity for the most part, 90% of the people. And if they do tend to err on the side of the negativity, don't invite them. I'm a big fan of please invite the people that you really like. If you haven't had dinner with them in the last 6 months or the last year, don't invite them to your damn wedding. Oh my God, for goodness sakes. It's not a business
meeting. And
you're not
going to be talking to them in 5 years. I mean,
Exactly.
So what do you do about gifts when a wedding doesn't happen? Because this happened a couple of times, obviously, because of COVID, because people had to move their wedding. They had to cancel their wedding. I mean, there were lots of circumstances where gifts were given. And then either the couple broke up or ended up not getting married or something else happened. So what happens to those gifts?
So I think that personally, I think that if the wedding doesn't happen or if that breakup happens very shortly after the ceremony, and I'm talking within a 3-month window, then I would really suggest giving back any gift that isn't monogrammed with or dated, you know, in some kind of personalized way. Because the personalized things can't be returned. And so you're just kind of stuck at that point. And they often end up in places like Goodwill. But I think it's who really wants a monogrammed cheese platter with wedding date that didn't happen?
How dare you? I love my monogrammed cheese platter. No, I'm kidding.
Find them all at Goodwill. No, I think it's really important that if the gift hasn't been used, if it hasn't been monogrammed or personalized, that it's something that gets given back to the person who gave it, and then they can return it or give it to someone else for a different wedding.
I told my couples, I'm like, look, give your guests the option to say yay or nay on it. So
I think
that's
nice too. Yeah.
You know, the wedding's not happening, so we're gonna start sending everybody's gifts back and let them know, because many times they're gonna say, you know what, just keep it, please. You know. Just assume that you're going to send it back. Don't say, hey, do you want me to keep it? Yeah. Do you want me to keep it? Or do you want me to send it back? Just say, we're going to be sending it back, and then let the person respond naturally. You know, no pressure on that.
Yeah, I think so too.
Oh my goodness.
If it's, it is in good taste to send, I would say, send them back, or like you said, give the option, because this is it was for an event that isn't taking place.
So for in the age of me, yeah. What about menus? I mean, as a wedding planner, I have to say one of the things that catches me off guard many times is getting a call from a guest, and not even an important guest, quote unquote, just a guest, random guest that's being invited, that says, you know what? I really don't like any of the menu options. Can I pre-order something completely different? And I'm like... Like, well, first of all,
we're not talking about like a health issue. We're talking about
personal preference.
Right? I don't really like steak, and you know, the chicken's always kind of dry. So I'm wondering if like, can I get like a pasta dish or maybe eggplant? Yeah. I mean, this is an actual conversation. This was an actual conversation. And I mean, I was literally like on the phone, and I'm so glad it wasn't FaceTime or anything like this, because I was like, are you kidding me? And like, I'm not your waiter, for goodness sakes. I'm not your waiter. Like,
no.
Oh my God.
Yeah. A big blanket statement. Weddings, you get what you get, and you don't get upset. That as long as like Marcy said, it's not for a health reason, for a true allergy or a true dietary restriction that's a must. I think it's really important that you just run with whatever's there. I know I'm a big fan of keeping a granola bar in my purse.
Oh,
hey, sir, I really don't like machines, but
my assistant can tell you all about combos. I am a huge combo person. I love my
pretzel and cheese one's my favorite.
We do totally.
That's the best one.
But that is a thing. You know, that is a thing that
it is. And it's, as a guest, I can say it's not appropriate for you to try to dictate the menu just based on your own personal preference. That you really want to go with the options that have been chosen for you. And leave it at that, unless you have some kind of a dietary restriction or an allergy. And those are very important to let the host know about, so that you can have options. Today's world is so filled with accommodation. And so I think that rather than worry about it, if you do have an actual issue, just address it and say, hey, listen, I am allergic to gluten, or I am, you know, you know, the weirdest one I've ever, I shouldn't say weirdest.
Yes. No, please tell me.
Mammalian allergy. Can't eat mammal meat. I know. Think about it for a minute.
As everybody goes silent. Everybody goes silent.
Is on that list. Yeah, right. So mammalian allergy and couldn't eat anything.
So if it has a tit, you can't eat it. Is that
pretty
right?
Much.
Is that,
I think yeah, so.
Right?
I think it's, yeah. I forget. And it like has hair.
As Mercy cringes. Sorry. We have Lizzie Post on, and I just, okay, great.
No. It's so funny. Okay, but I do want to talk about something really funny. Okay, so what about the uninvited guest of a guest?
Yes.
How many times have you done an event, or, you know, you've been in an event or even had an event, and you've had a guest show up that you didn't invite, but they're a guest of a guest. You didn't know that they were even dating anybody.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That it does happen. I don't hear of it happening like all the time, but it does happen. There's a myth out there that somehow if you are single, you automatically get a plus one to any wedding you're invited to. That is not true. You only get a plus one if the words plus one or and guest appear on the actual invitation. Really important for guests to recognize that weddings are often places to meet people. They are wonderful places and set very safe zones to exercise your social skills. And so to lean on small talk skills and things like that and embrace it. And I know a lot of folks say, but I've got social anxiety. I need a security blanket with me. And I say, you know, that's where etiquette can actually really come to your favor, is that by thinking about and recognizing that there are small talk topics that you can engage in, that you know your name, what you do, and what you like to spend your time doing, that is enough for you to be able to participate in any social gathering.
And you know what it sounded like? I have to tell you, what it sounded like is that this is a great place to get laid. I swear to God, it sounded like you were just, you were like staying in a very nice way.
I seem to always be the only single person at a wedding. But the truth is I know I can hang, I know I can handle it. I know that I can sit down at a table of people I don't know and say, oh, how do you know the couple? And, you know, their weddings offer such low hanging fruit for conversation. So,
and all sorts of things.
I really don't think that people should be offended if they don't get a plus one. I think they should have courage and go and engage. And you never know who you're going to meet when you're not saddled with someone who might not be having a good time. That's another thing. I often find a plus one more cumbersome. I always say like a plus one who can't handle their liquor or their alcohol is a real problem, because that's a stranger who's now creating a scene and it's your fault.
Oh, it's totally your fault. But you know, I can't even tell you how many weddings I've done where people met at weddings. So it really is a great time, because guess who's being invited? People that you like.
Yes, like people who are friends of exactly. But as to what to do, Marcy, when it happens, is that basically you make sure that an extra place gets set. You don't kick somebody out. Typically there's someone who doesn't show up the day of. And so the caterer also has, usually if they're a good caterer, they're planning on a couple of extra guests. So there are extra meals available. There might not be that vegetarian or gluten-free meal available, but there usually is something that the person can eat. But you really want to kind of move into that mode of gracious host. And you're stuck with this problem right now. And it's best if you can make the uninvited person feel as welcome as possible. And I think that's really hard for some people to do because they're so ticked off.
Talking about uninvited guest, no kids.
Oh, yes.
Is that a thing?
Yes. And it's perfectly fine to do so. It is. It's also perfectly fine to structure your wedding so that it's no guests under 14. And people are going to like gasp at this, but like you create a dividing line and stick to it. So I had a cousin who did his wedding. No cousins were invited, so I didn't get to go. But it was like that was the dividing line. And they didn't break that rule for like the cousin who was the best friend of the couple. Like no cousins. Other weddings. My sister was the bridesmaid, was the flower girl at my Aunt Sarah's wedding. And my grandmother said no toddlers. And guess who was a toddler? And my first memory is of being dropped off with my other grandparents and screaming my head off because I wasn't going to the wedding. And my sister, meanwhile, gets these beautiful pictures with the bride and everything. Well, tough crackers, Lizzie. Like, you're not going, and this is how it is. Right. And so you just really have to recognize that the couple has to make really tough decisions, and they're trying to manage a lot of people. You can always bring your kids and hire a local babysitter to watch them for you. I think it's great when a couple offers either some names of local babysitters that you could engage, or offers a babysitting service for the evening so that you can travel with your kids, but don't bring them to the wedding if they're not invited to the wedding. I don't care if they're a baby, they're going to be asleep in a little thing. Like it's really to stick to what the couple has set there, that this is their party, not yours.
It's amazing how often that happens too, especially, and I love the fact that you said stick to your rules, because it's amazing how many times a sister or a brother of the couple is allowed to bring a child, but nobody else was allowed to bring a child. And then all of a sudden you have people mad because they weren't able to bring their precious genius of a little baby, you know,
Totally me. I mean, we had our nieces and nephews as our, you know, our bridesmaids, nieces, nephews, and sisters. They were in the wedding party. We said besides that, they would only be first cousins that would allow the children. Beyond that, no friends are allowed to have, you know, bring their children. And we had people call us and ask, can we bring our child? But if you think about it, you know, you add this one, you add this one, you add this one, it all adds up. So you have to really think about like how many people are you really wanting to invite? And going back to the question about, you know, having a guest of a guest. I mean, if they're engaged to the person and you didn't know that, or they're on the, you know, on the cutting edge of being engaged to that person.
Sure.
They should probably be picking up the phone and calling you and telling you, listen, I'm very, very, you know, I'm in a very committed relationship. And I wanted you to know because she's not invited or he's not invited. And then let the couple who is getting married make that decision. Am I right?
Aces of an answer. Yes, absolutely. 100%. That would be the way to handle it. Because we do live in a world where you might be a really important person at somebody's wedding or even just a guest that someone's really excited to have come, but they might not really know that in the past 6 months, you've actually struck up a really serious relationship. And so calling and saying, hey, I just wanted to let you know I am in a pretty serious relationship. I know that your invitation was issued prior to me getting into this relationship, but I just wanted to check and make sure. Okay, it's not even bordering. It is kind of fishing for an invitation. But yeah. I think that a lot of times that person would be like, no, now that I know that you have someone, we would love for you to invite that person with you. You know, that kind of, please, 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 we'd be happy to. Or, boy, you know, I really wish we could accommodate it, but we have really, really strict capacity limits at the venue and we are at capacity. So I really appreciate you calling to ask first.
I actually, like, you know, I always have to be careful because there are relationship hoppers, you know, they jump from relationship to relationship to relationship.
Yes, yes.
And so,
person, you know, but now person.
Exactly. I'm like, a guest is a guest is a guest. But I say 6 months. Typically, mm-hmm. you want to have somebody that's been dating seriously for at least 6 months before you even get into and plus one kind of thing. Cause I'm like,
yeah.
And many times the plus one's like, I don't want to go. Why are you calling? Oh, for F's sakes. I do not want to go to this wedding.
Oh, is this the road we're going down? Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Right?
I am not ready to meet your family. We've only been dating 6 months. Right. Oh my God. Yeah. You know, this is not that serious.
A really good guideline to try and follow. There are the way we describe it at Emily Post is that we say this really has to be an established relationship because there are some traditionalists who are not going to move in until they are married. And I want to give space for those relationships too. But typically we say, if you're living together, that's the must invite list. That's the, like, you have to invite that person if they're living together. But outside of that, it's more about, is this an established couple? And I think your 6 months or 3 to 6 months is kind of a little more established than someone who just started dating.
We met last week. It's amazing.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So let me ask you, this is going to be a bit of a touchy subject, but I think it's kind of important. LGBTQ+, right? So, you know, it's obviously one of those things that when you invite people, sometimes I've had couples that are have personal feelings about it. I'm just going to put it like that. And but they have a friend that is LGBTQ+, and they say you're allowed to bring a guest, and they bring their significant other or whoever they're dating, even if it's non-binary. And then there's this uncomfortable moment that happens because they go, I don't know if I feel comfortable with that. And so far you've said the bride is basically the ruler of the ship when it comes to these kind of things, right? When it comes to these kind of things, that's a worrisome area because, you know, because it can become super offensive really quick. You can hurt people's feelings really quick. What is kind of a general rule of thumb? Like if you're inviting somebody, is it that you assume that you know them well enough that you should already know that they're going to be bringing somebody that, you know, is either non-binary or same sex or that type of thing?
I mean, I'm a big fan of inclusivity. I feel like if you're going to be...
Me too.
Yeah, right? Like if you're going to be inviting partners, then you're inviting partners. And I wouldn't be judging, I wouldn't be judging the type of partner that shows up. And I think that's really important. I know that some people are in very real situations where maybe the parents are really uncomfortable with it, but our encouragement to those parents would be, it is so much better to celebrate the love in all of its forms than it is to create a big stink and kick people out of your wedding, or say you can only bring a guest who's of the opposite gender than you or a different gender than you. I think it is, this is a place where I would really like to see us all start to come together and put people first. I think going back to that very first thing we talked about, you're there to celebrate love. And, you know, love comes in a lot of forms, this real beautiful thing. So
it is. And that's a weird invitation to get. Wouldn't that be a weird invitation to get that says, hey, by the way, you can only bring opposite sex. I'd be like, what the hell?
You're plus one limited to these choices. No.
I tell you, like, it's almost like
to address, as, you know, right. Like two people of the same sex. How do you address that? I mean, I get asked that all the time.
Oh, you know,
that's a good love our 200.
I know, I'm excited. After the show, I'm going to go on and order it.
We talk about all of that in it, how to address same-sex couples, that there are multiple ways you can choose to do it, right? You could use the plural of the title. You could also list them as individuals. For couples who are married women, you need to find out whether they prefer the Mrs. or the Ms. titles. So there's a lot of different ways to go with it. And we also have the use of mix, MX, and its plural, which is MXES, period.
Really?
And so mix and mixes are the way to go for folks who identify as non-binary, or who, if they choose to use that non-binary title, that you know that that's what they want to be using, because they might identify as female but use a mixed title because they want to.
I love that. MX or MXES. I love that. I didn't even know that existed. I didn't even know that existed. I love that because it's all it's inclusive. I think that love should be inclusive. I think weddings should be inclusive. You know, there's no other time that people get together except for birth, death, and celebrations. It's like, I don't want to get together with y'all because of a death. let's enjoy what we've got in front of us, you know. Let's have a good time with that. So I want to get away from weddings a little bit because I want to talk about you specifically, most, right?
Okay.
Because it's got to be a little daunting to be the great-great-granddaughter of the etiquette queen, because it's like, so what happens when you screw up?
Oh, I get it. I've had some friends even who know that this would not be a cool thing to do to me. Say, I can't believe that you would say this or do this given the job that you have. And you're just like, whoa, I am human. Mistakes. But there can be some judgment. There can be some assumption. I lost you guys.
Oh, no, we're here.
We're here.
Maybe coming back.
No, you're here. We can hear you.
She just can't hear us.
Oh, she just can't hear us. But you know, it is one of those things that, oh, there she is. Okay.
There we go. Now we're back. Yeah. Okay. There can be a lot of assumption. For some reason, people think I'm very clean and that I am going to be dressed immaculately every day. I wish I was Kate Middleton. Cambridge. I mean, like goals. Holy crap. Excuse me. You think that, I know you got me. So in my personal life, I swear like a sailor.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
I do think there are some assumptions, and in some ways I want to live up to that. And in other ways it's BS. It's like, you know, I'm a human being and I can make just as many mistakes as other people. I will tell you, one of my biggest faults is wedding gifts, is like sending a gift to a wedding I didn't attend. I still have my childhood best friend, family friend that I grew up with, have the gift. It's been sitting here for 4 years. I ran into him at his uncle's funeral, and I was his nickname growing up was Beezer. And so I was like, Beez, I'm so sorry. I have a wedding gift for you and I haven't sent it. And he's like, oh my God, please don't send it. Like, it's
fun. Oh my God.
What's that? Like, I didn't even notice. Like, don't worry about it. And I'm like mortified on the other end. But like, there are things like that where you're just like, I got my quirks too, you know?
Oh like, my God, that's so funny that you're like, here's your wedding gift at a funeral.
Yeah.
Like, ta-da.
I will say, it has been really cool being Emily's great-great-granddaughter. It I get really proud. I'll just say it, like, not even a humble brag. I am really proud of who she was. She wasn't perfect. And, you know, some of her advice is really dated. There's definitely things about women in the book and assumptions about women in the book that just do not fly today and didn't even fly 10 years after Emily wrote them. And that's why our books are always updated. It's, I mean, we're looking at a 100th anniversary edition. That's also a 20th edition. That's 20 rounds of updates this book has had, the newest version being completely rewritten from scratch, kind of doing the same thing Taylor Swift is with her music. So, you know, in order to beat the copyright, you got to rewrite the thing. And so, but it's really, if you've ever check out her biography, there's also an audiobook version of it, but it's called Mistress of American Manners, Daughter of the Gilded Age, or Daughter of the Gilded Age, Mistress of American Manners, Emily Post. And it's by Laura Claridge. Phenomenal. There's a companion book to it. Laura actually got a brain tumor in the middle of working on the book, lost her entire memory of the research, and had to build back up in order to complete the project. And she has a whole book about that process and how Emily was a huge inspiration to her as she rebuilt her brain. So that's called Mind Over Manners. So yeah, there's like this whole thing going on with it. But Emily's history, I mean, you look at someone who grew up in the Gilded Age, was on the list of the Astor's parties and things like that, hung out with these people, grew up with them. And then her whole world changed by the time she was an adult. Like, she got married, she ended up getting divorced, which was really rare in that time, though not completely unheard of. She watched her fortune disappear. She lost a son. She went through, you know, World War One and World War Two and the Great Depression, all before she wrote Etiquette, which she became famous for. I mean, like, her mom was bringing over groceries, you know, like, it when she was 40. I mean, it's really fascinating woman who lived a really interesting life. And so anyway, I'm
never stopped. And let me just say, and never stopped
until her deathbed. She was still working, you know, at the Emily Post Institute, answering etiquette questions and helping the world figure this out. But she was also smart. She was a woman who said, it's not my way or the highway. These things change over time and you have to pay attention to younger generations. And that's what our business does. You know, it's like I said, we're not a dictator of etiquette or a social barometer of it. So anyway, I could go on and on about how proud I am to be a Post.
Like, and it's so funny because I'm the great, great grandson of Joseph Smith. So, you know,
oh my gosh.
Yeah, I know. Direct descendant. I'm sure he'd be very proud of me. Hey. So, but you know, if I had a great great grandmother like Emily Post, I'd be like, oh my God, so proud of her as well. Because and I love the fact that you've continued her legacy. I mean, having the Emily Post Institute, and by the way, I've been running your Instagram on the ticker tape below. So if you want to check her out, how do people find you now? Right? Give people an idea of how to, because I know that you have like a podcast and you have books. So tell everybody about that stuff.
We have a really great weekly podcast called Awesome Etiquette, and we would love for you to give a listen. We like, much like this show, no breaks, no reruns. This is every single week we do an hour plus show, and we answer your etiquette questions. We also have a Patreon audience for that if you want to help sponsor the show. And then our website, emilypost.com, is a great place to engage with us, whether you're looking to hire us for seminars or speaking engagements, webinars, or e-learning programs. I know. If you want to come and get trained to teach Emily Post etiquette, either in the business or children's realms, we are here to teach you one-on-one online at your own pace. It's really, really great program called Train the Trainer. And you can learn more about it on our website. And then,
Marcy's writing it down. Marcy's writing it down.
We also have I'm actually doing a community call with the graduates of that program right after this. But we also have our wonderful line of books, which we are so proud of and which keep us going, and our website, emilypost.com. And of course, you can find us on all social media, LinkedIn, Twitter, what's the other one? Facebook and Instagram. We don't have a TikTok. I'm really sorry, but I only have so many hours in a day. I just can't do it.
And let me just tell our listeners, she does it all. Like, she does everything. They don't have a company behind the company. No. Lizzie does it all. Her and by the way, your co-author. I just want to make sure that we mention your co-author, right? Yeah. So Daniel Post-Sinning. Is that am I saying that right?
That's correct. Daniel Post-Sinning. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Just want to make sure that we mention that, you know, that there's a co-author in there as well, because, you know, we want to be proper.
Also, men in etiquette, not as common. So, like, you know, power to him. He really is out there holding up a male perspective on etiquette, and he's awesome. My business partner, my cousin, my best friend. Like, we have such a great working relationship.
Oh my God. And you're single? Did I hear that?
I am single. Yeah. Yes.
I'm just saying.
I've managed to escape the clutches of coupledom. But no, I am looking, but I will say the pandemic has not made it easy, and living in Girlington, Vermont doesn't for this hetero girl.
I was just thinking that that's a whole nother show about, like, etiquette on dating apps. I mean, I'd be like Grindr etiquette. Gosh. Is there such a thing? Oh my God. Well, anyway. I mean,
number one, don't who you are. Okay, that's it. Everybody's out.
Oh my God, Lizzie, you have been a doll. We have loved having you on the show. Oh my God, I cannot wait. I'm going to go back and re-listen to this, because it was just so much fun and interesting subject. So please, please, please follow her podcast. It's amazing. And reach out. And remember that the book is released tomorrow. So you get a pre-sale.
Amazon even today. Like, it's available. We just haven't announced it. It is available for pre-sale, and it comes out October 4th.
You heard it here first.
Excellent wedding gift.
An excellent wedding gift. Oh my God. All right, Lizzie, thank you so much for being on Behind the Veil. Marcy Gutenberg, always love having you on. I'm Keith Willard. We will see you next Tuesday at 2:00. Please like our page, like our YouTube, and you can check us out on basically every podcast platform out there. But for now, we're going to say goodbye. Everybody say bye.
Thank you so much.